whether it's a player or coach, you always ask, like, what's important to you? What is it? Is it money? Is it developing, becoming better at your craft? Is it your family is the only thing that matters? Everybody has different priorities in their life. For me, it's really simple. My family and my job. And my job's not really a job. It's just kind of what I do. It's a lifestyle and it's what I love. I could not imagine doing anything else. And actually, during the pandemic, you know, we can't be in the office. We couldn't work with our guys. That wasn't easy, I think, for any of us.
Today on the Rising Coaches Podcast. Today's podcast is brought to you by the Rising Coaches Association, the biggest coaching tree in all of basketball. Sign up for the Rising Coaches Association now for just $120 a year and become part of our community, relationships, and development. We talk about it all the time. There's no straight lines in this profession. There's only ups and downs. You need a community that knows exactly what you're going through and has been there before to help lean on during the rough times of the industry. You need genuine relationships, not just exchanging numbers, not just meeting new people at the Final Four in the off season. You should be doing it all year round, and we provide tremendous opportunities to create those genuine relationships all through the year. And finally, development. We have so much content and so many resources so that you can work on your craft and become a better coach. Because we put such a premium and an emphasis on helping you establish new, genuine relationships, it takes all of the political BS side of the business out of the equation for you. All of that gets removed off of your plate. You can just worry about being you, making new friends in the business, and working on your craft and becoming the best coach that you can be and impacting the people that you're around on a daily basis. For more information, visit risingcoaches.com/membership on risingcoaches.com. Welcome back to another edition of the Rising Coaches Podcast. I'm Adam Gordon, joined today by Adam Cohen, Associate Head Coach at Stanford. Very excited about today's episode, which is brought to you by Lucio Sports. Lucio Sports takes care of all communication that you have, whether it be with your players, your coaching staff, distributing play diagrams, play animations, and what they're doing in timeouts and in huddles. I don't know if you've seen this, Adam, but it sounds like the NCAA is about to pass a blanket waiver allowing teams to use technology in huddles. Lucio has been doing this in the NBA for the last few years. They have several NBA teams using their play diagrams and animations in timeouts. So now apps. Also, one more thing. They just launched our new Rising Coaches profile pages. This is something that we've been working on with Lucio Sports for over a year now. So now all Rising Coaches members will have an online coaching portfolio that is viewable to anybody. So if you Google Adam Cohen, in addition to the 15 Ivy League schools that he's been at, no, I'm just kidding, the different schools he's been at, you'll see his Rising Coaches portfolio as well. So visit luciosports.com, follow them on social media, and sign up for a membership, risingcoaches.com, so that you can get your personal license to Lucio and your online coaching portfolio page. Okay, very excited to have our good friend Adam Cohen joining us today. Adam, what's up, man?
What's up? How are you? Thanks for having me. Looking forward to it as well.
Man, it's crazy that we've been doing this podcast now for a few years, and I can't believe this is the first time you're on it. You've spoken at events multiple times, but I don't think we've ever had you on the podcast.
Well, it's a little too late, I guess, but no, I'm excited to be on, and you know, it's been, at least 8-9 years since Rising Coaches started, and it's been fun to see its path and its journey, and I'm just glad to be a part of it.
11 years. Can you believe it?
That's right. Wow.
I know I've told this story before, but I gotta tell it again because it's my favorite. We, so Rising Coaches kind of like came out of the video room, which is really a storage closet at Clemson. Myself and Andy Farrell were on staff there. Trey Meyer was a manager there. And, we talked about it. And eventually we were just like, okay, let's do it. We're going to host this conference in Vegas. And we're going to, we don't know if anyone's going to come or not, but we're going to put an ad on Hoop Dirt
and just see if anyone hits us back. And we put the ad on Hoop Dirt, and my phone rang in like 20 minutes, like literally 20 minutes later. And it was this guy, Adam Cohen, who I did not know at the time. And I believe you were a video coordinator at USC. I think I got that title right. You were definitely at USC. And you're like, what is this? This sounds cool. And I, you know, we kind of talked for a few minutes and you're like, okay, I'll be there. And that was it. And then the friendship was born, and yeah, you're one of the original members and original gangsters of Rising Coaches going back to the very first day.
That's amazing. Like, just in general, the path that we all take, but the path of how this started is really very cool. And it's helped us all in so many different ways, whether it's talking to people, connecting with new people, learning about new things, connecting us. It's just pretty awesome to see.
It's really cool too, like how that, like each year there's new people that come into the organization, and it's cool to watch how everyone's path grows. But especially that very first like inaugural group with you, Marlon Stewart, Mike Fly. I mean, there's so many guys, I'm going to not be able to name them all. But it's really cool to see everyone, because you guys are all killing it in the profession, and to see your guys' success, it makes me proud.
Well, thank you. No, it's amazing. We talk to those guys all the time. We still do. And so happy for them, and just being able to be in it and stay in this thing. And coaching is hard. I mean, it's hard for everybody. And to be able to have kind of a group to rely on through it all has been really, really rewarding for a lot of reasons.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about your path, if that's cool.
Sure.
I know you've been at it for a while now, so we probably won't have time to talk about every single stop. But just a quick, I want to get let's get us to the USC point. So, manager at Arizona, right? Started there. Who was on staff there? Just like real quick, was there anybody that you managed with? Or?
Yeah, really fortunate starting point for me. I kind of got lucky and got to know Josh Pastner, now the head coach at Georgia Tech, and he gave me my start to be a manager, basically. So the staff there was Josh Pastner as an assistant coach, Miles Simon as an assistant coach, and then either Jim Rosborough, who then retired, and Kevin O'Neill took over as an assistant coach for Lute Olson. And then my last year at Arizona as manager was when Kevin O'Neill ended up taking over for Coach Olson when he had some health issues. And that was 2008. So, but I still talk to Josh all the time. Miles, I stay in contact with. Kevin O'Neill, I stay in contact with. So pretty amazing in terms of how that started. I always say I'm from Buffalo, New York, and I never, ever would have thought I would be living in Tucson, Arizona for college, but it worked out great.
Yeah. And we talk all the time, like on the podcast and different deals, about like the value of, well, first of all, there's no right or wrong path. Everyone's got their own journey, and that's one of the cool things about this profession. It's also one of the biggest challenges, is there's no like blueprint to follow. And we talk about the value all the time of, like, you know, being at a small college and being able to get that hands-on experience at a young age. But your story is it shows the value of the opposite. You know, you get to be around a big staff and interact, you know, especially if you're at the high major level, chances are you're going to be around some great, great basketball minds and, you know, just the best in the business. Right. And so you have this network to start out with of people that are, you know, you mentioned Kevin O'Neill, Josh Pastner, Miles Simon, you know, that's the value of that route, correct?
Yeah. And Adam, hopefully you guys can hear me all right, but I broke up a little bit. But anyway, yeah, for me, that was the best thing possible, because you're at the highest level of college basketball. You're dealing with high level players, high level coaches, and you're seeing how it can get done. And we had a number of managers, you know, we had, I think, 8 or 9 managers at the time. So when I first got there, I was just trying to fit in, you know, do whatever's asked, be in the office at all hours, show that I'm really committed. And then next thing you know, you just learn on the fly. And by seeing it at that level, you're seeing it done the best possible way. And is the way I looked at it, you know, that program at the time was extremely successful, going to Final Fours and winning a national championship about 10 years prior. And Coach Pastner was being talked about for all kinds of head jobs at the time. He was young and growing as an assistant coach and all that. So I kind of just tried to learn from him and learn from the other coaches in terms of how to watch film, how to send out videos in every way possible, recruiting mail outs. I mean, everything that a lot of people are still doing now, we just had it a little bit different then. But being at that level really gave me an opportunity to see what it was like, at the, just how things are done in a great program.
Okay, so from there you go to New Orleans and you work for Coach Pasternak, who's now at Santa Barbara, where he just took them to the tournament. And then I assume you have a great experience. I know Coach Pasternak's amazing, and you guys are still really close to this day, which is cool. And it's funny because he said, like, he spoke at our most recent event, and he was like, "I was a wreck at New Orleans," but you guys are still winning like 18 games, or, you know, which is really good at a school like that, especially back then. Okay, and then Kevin O'Neill gets the USC job, and obviously you talked about your connection to him from Arizona, and you join his staff as video coordinator. But I remember coming to your practices at that time. Like, that's, again, that's when we met, and I grew up in Southern California, and I came by and hung out a couple times, and you showed me around the office, and it kind of felt like you were his right-hand man a little bit. I don't remember who all was on that staff, and I'm sure you had a great staff, but you've always just kind of like engrossed yourself in the X's and O's. Like, you're one of the biggest like basketball junkies I think I know. Like, how did you, you know, I think a lot of people, especially like that are in support staff roles, like they struggle to find confidence to like interact with their head coach like that, and bring ideas to the table and just like, and I know it's easy to say, like, you just got to do it and you got to put yourself out there, but that's a real struggle for people. I remember when I was at Clemson one time, and I mentioned something to my boss, Oliver Purnell, at the time. And I was like, yeah, like, this was something that I thought of a week ago, and whatever. And it was something that could have helped us, and I never brought it up to him. And he laid into me. He's like, "What are you talking about?" Like, I was like, "I never got a chance to tell you." He's like, "What are you talking about? Your office is like right down the hall. What do you mean you never get to tell me?" And it just like woke me up. Like, okay, I'm here to, like, there's only like seven of us on staff. I'm here to make an impact. Like, I have to like bring things to the table. But anyways, what do you say to people that are struggling to find that type of interaction with their head coach and, you know, struggle with that?
It's confidence? Such a good point. It's such a good point. I always think, like, it, when you're hired as a member of a staff, okay, like, that person has trust in you. Now, it may not be trust in you to recruit every player in the country or trust you to come up with a game plan, but he has trust in you that you're going to work and be loyal to him. When I worked for Coach Pasternak, I mean, I was a grad assistant just out of undergrad student as a manager, and he had me doing everything. And that put me in a position to really like learn and grow on the fly. And it was a hard, hard situation. Like, we had 9 freshmen and it was just a lot, but I learned and you grew. When I got back with Kevin O'Neill after that, it was kind of one of those things where I was just always around the office. He would come in to watch film, no lie, at 5 a.m. every single day. And for my first 4 months I was there, I lived next door at the Radisson Hotel at USC. And we all did, myself, Kevin O'Neill, one of our other video ops guys, Ryan Hennick, who was also a manager with us at Arizona. And the three of us would just go in there and watch film and try to learn what we were going to put in for the next year or game plan or whatever it would be. And it was almost like we didn't have anybody there. So by going in really early with him, he kind of saw that we were going to put in the work and do whatever it took. And I think one thing you are always doing in those positions is you're always kind of reinventing, recreating your job in certain ways. And now the way technology is, there is so much that you can learn and do that I didn't really have when it was 2009, 2010. And, I think it's just, you got to know you're there for a reason. When I always thought this too, whenever I go into the first staff meeting of the year, like a new season starts, the guys are back in the fall semester or whatever it may be, I always look around the room and I just say to myself, this is pretty cool. I'm with like 6 or 7 or however many other staff members, and we're running this program. Like, how cool is that? Like, everything you talk about as a young kid, you see teams in the NCAA tournament and TV and everything else. And then you're in that room, man, how it's just amazing to be a part of that level of basketball and that level of ability to learn and give ideas to each other and work as a unit. Like, it's just an exciting thing for me to be a part of. And so I was kind of in the mindset of, if I'm going to work and I'm going to be able to give a true, honest opinion that may have made sense, even though if it was wrong at times, which I'm sure it was a lot and it current still is, like, I'm going to have enough confidence to speak my mind because I know I've put the time in to learn about it.
Yeah. Did you ever worry or like, how do you bring things to the table and not feel like you're stepping on toes of like the other staff?
I think the first thing is you have great relationships with everybody on staff and no one has that much of an ego. I say it all the time. Like, you just have to get over yourself, right? Everyone has to get over themselves. None of us are that important. So when I was in the video or ops role, the first thing I would always do would be go to the assistant coaches and throw it at them, you know, see what they thought before I would go directly to Kevin O'Neill or whoever else I was working for at the time. And I think the collaboration is really important to me. It's never my idea or his idea or his recruit. It's not how it works. Like, we're all trying to win together. We're all trying to develop guys together. We're all going to work really hard at it. And whoever comes up with the best idea, great. That's awesome. We do it together. I think, you know, the playoffs a couple of years ago, Steve Kerr gave credit to his video guy who suggested to start Andre Iguodala at the five when nobody else was doing that. Well, that didn't come from an assistant coach. It came from the video guy. And you know what? It helped them win the NBA finals. And I think all those assistant coaches and Coach Kerr and the video guy who suggested it all felt pretty good about it after.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, you go from USC to I'm not even going to ask you to share any Kevin O'Neill stories, by the way. I'm sure you have one. You go from USC to Rice as an assistant coach, which is a heck of a jump, right? And Rice, you know, that's a very, very good mid-major program. Most people, you know, have to go to a low major to get some sort of recruiting experience and then work their way up to a place like Rice. How were you able to make that jump? And yeah, like, tell us about that first experience.
I was really fortunate. There's really no other way to say it. Joe Pasternak, who I worked for at New Orleans, recommended me to Ben Braun, who was the head coach at Rice, who Joe had worked for as an assistant at Cal Berkeley. And I got an opportunity to interview. They ended up having two openings on the staff, and the team had done really well the year before, won 19 games, and, you know, had a chance to be pretty good that following year. And just to have the opportunity to work for a coach who's won 600 games, and Coach Pasternak thought enough of me to, you know, bring me up to him and give me a chance to interview and kind of talk about it. I had no idea what I was doing going into that position. I'll tell you that right now. I knew I was going to work hard and I knew I was going to try to figure it out. But as I look back, like, I wasn't ready. But you know what? They gave me a chance, and really fortunate that I was able to kind of make mistakes and learn on the fly. And I thought I was ready, that's for sure, but I definitely wasn't. And we ended up recruiting a really good class. Our team ended up not being as good as I would have hoped. And part of it was the number of kids transferred out after I got the job, before I actually got to campus. So it made for a tough year, but going through those tough times really helped me grow as a coach, learn how to do things and get better.
Yeah, you say you weren't ready, but obviously you did a pretty good job because you quickly got a spot at Harvard, and then Harvard led to Vanderbilt, right? And then Vanderbilt led to Stanford. Is that right? Did I leave anything out?
No, you got it. It's been a wild journey.
Yeah, it has. And you're now going into year five or six at Stanford?
Year six.
So that's like first of all, that's a long time for anybody to be in one spot in this business. You know how crazy this business is. And, but also, like, you had a very quick, you know, come up in the profession. So how do you feel like going into year six somewhere?
It's great. I always say that I never have expected to be where I've been in any way. So I never thought I'd be in Tucson, Arizona, or New Orleans, or Houston, or Boston, or Nashville. Like, all these situations kind of came about without any expectation. here at Stanford, it's been great. Like to see us try to grow this thing and build it. Obviously at Stanford, it's an incredible place. Coach Haas is amazing to work for, gives me a ton of responsibility. But even more than that, just the opportunity to be at a place like this. I mean, it's pretty amazing. And, you know, like I think there are challenges at every job you go to. And for me, the academic realm has kind of been the path that I've taken, and it's just kind of worked out that way. And fortunately, now I'm kind of at the premier place for high academic kids to come to, as well as just to be a part of this university is unlike any other.
Yeah, and it like times up well with like our age too, right? Like you got married, you got a family now, you have a son. Like, so I know when you're young, you're like so anxious to move on. Like what's next? What's next? And now you're probably like enjoying, you know, being at one spot, I would guess. I don't know.
No, it, for sure. I mean, it's definitely, we're getting old, by the way. It's crazy.
We are.
No, it's real. And so it's one of those things where we all know how this business goes. It's very hard, and we're all very fortunate to be able to be in any position in coaching, especially at this level of coaching, especially at a place like Stanford. I know how fortunate I am. And I've gotten a couple of breaks along the way from people that I've worked for that really believed in me, but it's been, we live on campus. My wife, we have a 4-month-old son. Our whole coaching staff lives on campus. We take a golf cart to the office every day. It's like, you know, it's paradise in a lot of ways. And, you know, it's an incredible place to recruit to. It's not easy to get kids into here, but for the right kid, the right family who understand what Stanford means, there's really nothing like it.
Yeah. And I've said this before, like you guys have the nicest staff, like just the nicest group of guys. Jeff left, which is a big hit because he is like up there in terms of one of the nicest people in the profession. Yep. All time. But yeah, all you guys like great. I can just see you guys living on the same block.
We're literally we share the same little playground in the middle. It's a fun group, and until this year we've had the same staff in terms of assistant coaches and head coach for 5 straight years, which is very doesn't happen very often. And then Coach Wilbur and Jeff got the head job at Denver, which is an awesome opportunity for him, so we're trying to fill that spot. And but for 5 years in a row we've had the same staff. It's been pretty cool to see.
Yeah, that is Don't mess up that hire, because that nicest staff in the country is a big thing.
No doubt.
You got big shoes to fill there. Talk about, let's like go back and pull on that thread a little bit more about like being in the coaching profession and always anxious for your next deal and just all the like challenges of like the mental toll that this profession takes on people. How have you seen that, like, you know, as you've kind of grown up, how have you changed your views on those things, and how have you seen it changed, you know, over the last 10, 15 years?
Yeah. You know, when I was a junior in high school, I wrote letters to every college coach in the country, and I wanted to coach, and I had no idea how to do it. Okay. And fortunately, I heard back from a number of people who gave some really good suggestions, including Josh Pastner, who kind of gave me my start. And at that point, all I was thinking was, man, I can't wait to be a college coach. Like, what an amazing, amazing life. And fortunately, it's been amazing for me. I've been at some incredible places with some great people, with some great players that have been awesome to be around, and all of that. And I think as you go through this, there's so much to learn. Every year you go through a season, you learn so much about yourself. You learn so much about the profession. You learn so much about coaching, motivating, influencing guys. And I haven't even mentioned the X's and O's or the actual like scheme-based stuff, but the cultural part is so real. And there's so much more to be able to take from, as well as how well you can communicate and interact with your players and staff and everything else. Like, there's just so much into running a good basketball program. And those are things I never would have known 10 years ago, 5 years ago. Every year you learn so much more about the challenges, but also just what it takes. And I try to tell young coaches who want to become an assistant coach or an ops guy or even a head coach down the line, I just tell them, like, understand what you're getting into, because it's not for everybody. You know, when we were 22 years old, there may have been this many coaches who want it. And now those guys that I know, it's so small now in terms of who are still doing it, especially at the Division I level. And I just think the lifestyle you live, you may never know where you're going to live. You may never know how things are going to go for you. There's going to be ups. There's going to be downs. You're dealing with 18 to 22 year olds who are going through a lot of things. And frankly, your livelihood is based on how they perform a lot of the times. And so it's up to you to bring the right ones in. And it's up to your staff to kind of be able to develop them in different ways. And for me, that's become the most exciting part of the journey, is just seeing how we can develop young men into the best versions of themselves. And what goes along with that is hopefully winning a lot of games and having a lifestyle.
Yeah, for sure. You've also been really good at the networking piece, not in terms of just like number of relationships or anything like that, but you seem like, I've always been impressed with how intentional you are with the relationships you build. You're the first guy that I've seen like our age, and this is going back, however many years, but like you had relationships with a lot of head coaches, you have relationships with athletic directors. That's great. Like it's so simple, but like I would see it and I'd be like, oh man, why didn't I ever think to like build relationships with people that are like, making decisions? Like, is that, can you talk a little bit about like how you go about building relationships and like, how some of those are formed and just any philosophy or system that you use?
Yeah, sure. With that, I think I do like to learn from a lot of different people, right? And if somebody can help me become better at my profession or better at coaching or better at dealing with certain situations, I would love to reach out to them. And it's kind of amazing how coaches, when I was growing up, when I started in this business and I really worked at Five Star Basketball Camp, it was a amazing fraternity of coaches where guys wanted to help each other, whether it was talking X's and O's or helping each other with players or whatever it could be. And I think now it's become so cutthroat where those relationships aren't real anymore. And it's just who can help me get from point A to point B. And that's what it's about. I've never thought that way. I really believe coaching is a fraternity. And if you're coaching for the right reasons, you attract other people like you. And for me, it's, I want to learn from other people. I want to help other people if they need help with a player, maybe I know of somebody that could fit them well. And they ask me, I'll be glad to tell them. Like, I think this business is hard enough for us as is, that if we can help each other, it goes a long way. And so when you're building relationships, I think it's important to know that it's not a one-way street where you're just trying to get something out of somebody, because you're not going to get anything out of it, that person. And then the second part of it is like, you got to be willing to help people. And so for me, if a young coach wants to reach out about my path or how I was fortunate to get to this place, I'll always take that call. I'll always respond to that email, because that was me, 10 years ago. And I had no idea how to get into the business. The only thing I knew was it's all about relationships, and you got to work and you got to learn and you got to develop, develop your pattern, develop your network, all that kind of stuff. But I didn't know how to do any of that stuff. And you just kind of go through it on the fly and you learn from people that you really respect.
Well, and I think what's like, as from an outsider's perspective, I think what's really served you well is it all goes back to like your passion for what you're doing. Like I can't imagine you doing anything else. Like, you really seem like you love basketball, number one, which we all do, but really like coaching, everything about it. And so like, it seems like all your relationships stem from that joy.
No, thanks for saying that, because it's so true. I really believe that if you have a lot of other interests, it's a really hard business for you to succeed in. Now for me, it's my job, my family, and that's really it. I don't do many other things. I don't have a ton of other friends outside of the business. I do it from high school and some from college, but not a large amount that I see very often. So I've committed myself to learning and growing the game, helping develop our players and get them better. And it's so exciting to me when you see guys have success and see guys who you've helped get there. Like, that's so rewarding to me as a coach. And yeah, we spend so much time. I say this all the time, like, the hardest part is when you don't have success, because you know how much time you put into it to try to have success. But you know what? The person against from us is doing the exact same thing. We all want to win. We all want to try to, you know, develop faster and do better and everything else, but it may not work. And you got to really, you got to be able to take that and find ways to grow with it as well.
Yeah. You also have always seemed super disciplined. Like, has that been a thing that you just have always had? Like, were you born with that? Or did you, like, I mean, you're like, you always, even at the Final Four, when people are like stumbling out of bed at 11 a.m. hungover, like, you're getting up early. I'm seeing you like early in the morning coming out of getting a workout in, you know what I mean? And you're going to have coffee with somebody. Like, you seem really disciplined. I'm just curious.
I think so. I think that's fair to say. Like, I have a pretty strict schedule I try to stay to. But again, like, it goes back to what's important to you. For me, what's important to me is doing my job as good as I can outside of my family and everything, and being as good of a coach as I can be. How can I help my players? How can I learn to be a better coach? How can I be great to my family? That's really all I got. And for me, that's what's important to me. And I think, you know, as you go through life, whether it's a player or a coach, you always ask, like, what's important to you? What is it? Is it money? Is it developing, becoming better at your craft? Is it your family is the only thing that matters? Everybody has different priorities in their life. For me, it's really simple. My family and my job. And my job's not really a job. It's just kind of what I do. It's a lifestyle and it's what I love. Like, I could not imagine doing anything else. And actually, during the pandemic, you know, we can't be in the office. We couldn't work with our guys. That wasn't easy, I think, for any of us. And for me especially, like, obviously I could work from home, but it's not the same that in terms of the interaction that you'd have with your players, with your staff, the whole deal. And that's the stuff I love.
What's up, podcast fans? I want to share some information about one of our partners, Lucio Sports. The team at Lucio has built an integrated platform of coaching productivity and player development apps that are being used by some of the best basketball programs around the globe, helping everyone from NBA champions to youth development academies. Their innovative and competitive memorization games make it so much easier for new players and staff members to remotely get caught up to speed. With animated playbooks, drill libraries, player development planning and monitoring, engaging game plans and scouting reports, predictive play drawing, their content services team, and more, Lucio Sports has got you covered. From players to coaches to support staff and executives, use Lucio Sports to securely keep everyone in your organization on the same page with simple on-demand access to your team's entire knowledge base. For more information, check out luciosports.com. That's L-U-C-E-O sports.com.
No, I know you're a big reader. What are you reading now, or what have you read recently that's really gotten you inspired?
Yeah, so I would say I read a ton of articles. I listen to a ton of podcasts. But one of the best things I've done from quarantine till now is I've read the books about What Drives Winning by Brett Ledbetter. And he has a conference he does every year. And you can go to What Drives Winning online, and he has videos as well as some readings that you can look at. But he has a new book out called What Drives Winning Environments that just came out. I read that during the year. Really talks about building your culture, that kind of thing. I've absolutely loved his stuff. He's somebody I think everybody should check out. Legacy is a great book. Talk about the New Zealand All Blacks. A Captain's Class is an outstanding book, which looks at, you know, some of the best captains the best teams in all of sports and who are the captains that led them. And it wasn't that alpha male that would be the outspoken voice all the time. It was somebody unique and different. I think that's a great one if you have some leaders on your team that you can give to them. The Way of Baseball by Sean Green, the former baseball player, was an outstanding book that really helps players who get in their own minds and being able to kind of get their best out of themselves. So I've read some really good ones lately. That's one thing that the pandemic did, was I spent a lot more time reading and searching things and also putting together like my own personal philosophy, I guess you'd say.
Is this your first time putting together your own philosophy? I'm assuming you're talking about like a philosophy of how you'd run your program.
Yeah, that as well as putting together all my thoughts of things that I've learned since I've been in coaching, things I would try to do differently if I had an opportunity to be head coach. And it's been really cool to kind of put together 15 years or so of ideas and how does it fit me with all the different seasons I've been a part of. That's been a really fun journey to go through as well.
Was that your first time putting that stuff on paper, or have you done stuff like that in the past?
I think you're always adapting it. This was kind of my first time I put it all together. And it's been really rewarding, right? You take so many things, you have so many notes over the years. And I really tried to take things from every place I've been, every coach I've worked for, of some amazing things, including a lot we do here. Coach Haas is an incredible culture builder, and he's just an incredible person. And majority of the stuff is stuff that I've done here. So it's been fun to kind of put my own spin on things.
Yeah, I've done that before too. It's an amazing exercise that I highly recommend everyone do. It's
hard.
It was harder than I thought. It was really hard. Like the hard thing for me was narrowing down, like not having 15 core principles and like getting it down to like three or four. Was that a similar struggle for you?
Without a doubt. To that point, I recommend anybody listening. Michael Gervais is a sports psychologist who works with Pete Carroll and Seattle Seahawks. He has a audiobook out. I can't remember the name of it, but his audiobook talks about being able to create your own personal philosophy and, you know, what's important to you, learning about yourself. That helped me when I read that, or I listened to that, I should say. That helped me put together my own thoughts. And because 100% agree with you, especially when you work for a number of different coaches and you learn so much from different people, like you have ideas that may seem outstanding, but they may not fit you. And knowing who you are as a coach, I think, is one of the most underrated traits. Like, what is actually important to you? Is it that we have crazy energy in the gym? Is it the focus of the players? Is it just how do you want your program to be run? Is it, there's so many different ways that can all be done right. And to figure out what fits you is so hard, but also so rewarding.
For sure. I knew you were a big Michael Gervais guy. I love Finding Mastery. I feel like you guys could be like cousins or something. Any relation?
Not that I know of, but I respect the heck out of him. I mean, he's so good at what he does, and Compete, Create, that's what his book's called. But it's so cool. He has a great podcast that is really worthwhile to listen to. I know I do every week.
Yeah, I used to like listen to it religiously. I kind of got out of it, but I need to get back onto it. He's so good. He's so good. The questions he asks are the best. I could totally see you guys having like a very intellectual conversation over a glass of red wine or something. Okay. I wanted to ask you, this is kind of like the last topic that I wanted to like dive into with you. As much as we've talked about how passionate you are about coaching, like one thing about our profession is like, it's a bunch of people that like to gossip, and you know, that's just like a reality of it. And with social media, you know, it amplifies all that stuff. How do you block some of that stuff out? Whether it's like, you know, building what you guys have built at Stanford, which takes time and it didn't come right away, and hearing, you know, whatever noise you might hear about, you know, oh, these guys got to win or blah, blah, blah. Or like your name is starting to get thrown around for a lot of head coaching jobs. Some of the rumors may be true, some may be false, I don't know. But like, how do you deal with all that chatter?
Yeah, I think it's harder for our players to deal with it than us as coaches. And I think the bigger the program you're at, obviously there's more eyes on you, the expectations grow in different ways. And when our players get, not just here, but everywhere in the country, when they get back to their phone after a game, if they didn't play well, some of the mentions that they receive or direct messages they receive on Instagram or Twitter or something like that are just really bad. And it really affects them. And I think that's something that we all as coaches have to know, is that outside influences are real on our players. And I think, you know, you have certain standards and expectations you always want to live up to, right? And so you got to, as a coach, you got to be really intentional about not letting the outside influences affect you. You just can't. It's a waste of time. It doesn't do any good. And frankly, you're doing everything you possibly can to be as good as you can. So it's not like any type of negativity is going to fuel you more than your own, you know, your own feeling of yourself. So I think it's more for us to really spend time to educate our players of how to handle some of this negative talk that comes around them and still be able to keep their confidence high, still be able to trust the message, and still be able to be the best version of who they are supposed to be.
Okay, help us out here. We've determined the best protocol for when someone gets fired. I know it's awkward. People don't know, should I reach out? Should I not reach out? So yeah. We've had multiple guests on the show who have gotten fired, and we've talked at length about, like, okay, what's the right protocol? Like, it's always awkward. Should I reach out? Should I not reach out? The correct thing is to reach out right away. Help us out here. What's the proper protocol for when your name gets mentioned on Hoop Dirt with like a head job? Like, do you like when people text you and screenshot the little Hoop Dirt? Like, oh, I heard you're up for this. Should they just leave you alone? Like, tell us, like, for real, help us out. Like, what should people do?
Well, I'll tell you this. Like, I don't think I've ever been involved in any job opportunity that I've seen on Twitter ever. So it's right on like Hoop Dirt or something like that, and people text me, I'm like, what? Where did this come from? Like, no, it's not true at all. You know, I think it's great that people can put people's names out there, or whatever it may be. But the reality is, a lot of times, I think it's important to know that it's completely false and never been contacted or whatever it may be. I know that's how it's been for me. I would receive a message that I would have no idea where it came from, and it would just be bizarre. And I'd just be like, okay, thanks. That's great. But I'm not going to worry about this. I'm just going to waste my time.
So should people not reach out when they see that stuff, unless they're like trying to get a laugh or what?
No, I don't think. I think it's always nice to be able to see things. It's not bad to read out, but I think more than anything, it goes back to the genuine relationships you have, right? Like, at the end of the day, that's what matters most. And networking is great, and getting to know people is great. But like, you're gonna know something if you have a true relationship with that person. And a lot of times, you know, if myself or somebody else was actually involved in one of those situations, we'd probably want it to keep quiet anyway. So you never know. It's just our business is wild, especially this time of year.
It is definitely a wild business. But you've done a great job navigating it, man, and proud of you and all your success. And
well, I know it won't be long. That. Thank you.
Yeah, I know it won't be long until you are running your own program. Hopefully we don't see it on on social media first and you don't get blown up. But excited for that day to come, man.
No, I really appreciate it. And honestly, it's been a fun journey, and it's been fun to see this Rising Coaches platform grow like crazy. And, you know, I can share this with a lot of people. A friend of mine, you know, asked me about a grad assistant, if I had any suggestions. And the first person I reached out to was you. And that just goes hand in hand with how your platform has grown and working. And I think that's what it's all about, is coaches helping coaches. And I know that's really important to me, because I've had coaches help me to get to where I've been able to go.
Yeah. And I think the reason it's grown like it has, because it's our platform. You know what I mean? Like, the thing that's so cool about it is everyone takes ownership in it, and it's not just one face to it. You know, I happen to be the one that get out of the profession to keep the bus on the road. But the thing that's so special about it is, like, so many people have been a part of it and continue to make it what it is. Yourself included.
No doubt about it. No, yeah. Appreciate that. No doubt about it. And it's, I think it's so important for young coaches to know that myself, you, whoever it may be, we may not be able to help with the job, but if we can give you any piece of advice, it could be worthwhile forever, for the rest of your life. And we all want to help each other. And especially if you're in this thing for the right reasons, where you do want to help become a coach, you want to help players develop, you want to learn about leadership and how to make people better. Like, those are the kind of people that I know I get really attracted to in terms of believing that they have a bright future.
Well, and the thing that's cool too is, not to just talk Rising Coaches all day, but I will. The thing that's cool is, you know, you talked about it, like, the relationships that are like born out of like genuine, you know, like two-way street, you know, genuine interaction and wanting to listen and learn from somebody. Those are the relationships that become beneficial. And like the whole thing with Rising Coaches is like, build relationships with your peers. And I think the reason why those relationships have lasted and stood the test of time is because when it's your peers, you put down your guard. You're not building those relationships to try to get a job. You're genuinely bonding over shared passion, shared experience, shared profession. But it just so happens that those are the relationships that they do really benefit you, like a couple years down the road. I mean, those are the ones that lead to jobs and lead to opportunities.
So true. It's so true. We're all going through the same thing. We're all trying to meet people that we can learn from, grow from, maybe can help you down the line. But at the end of the day, genuine, real relationships are how you move your way through this business. And, but also that means relationships with your players. Like, that means relationships with the coaches you're working with. Those are the guys, the people that you're around every day. Those are the guys you have to prove your worth to. And fortunate for me, I've had a couple of guys who really have taken me under their wing and given me opportunities and helped me just get better at my craft. And I think so many young coaches just expect people to go to bat for them when, frankly, why would they? When the truth is, if you have these true relationships, you really develop them, you get to know each other, you talk basketball, you talk coaching, that's where it comes from. And that's an exciting deal.
Absolutely. Well, Adam, we appreciate you taking the time, man. Glad we finally got you on the podcast, and enjoy the rest of your off season, man.
No, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. And let me give my email just in case anybody ever wants to reach out. It's A, B as in boy, Cohen, C-O-H-E-N, @stanford.edu, abcohen@stanford.edu. And if I can help anybody, feel free, reach out anytime.
Thanks, Adam.